Let's get to know the artist behind the epic melodies, songs, and beats. Celebrating the best new music from around the world. This is the A State of Trance Podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Onne and welcome to a new A State of Trance Podcast within the studio today. Alle Wacht, a.k.a. Alan Watts.
Thank you for having me, Ruben.
Yeah, of course. It's nice to have you. I already thought we recorded the podcast, but we didn't. So it's nice to go and sit down with you and to talk about everything Alan Watts.
Of course, yeah.
So let's start at the very, very beginning. What made you start DJing or start making music? What was the passion that ignited you to become Alan Watts?
I always was listening to trance, of course, and I wanted more than that. So I started to play around with music programs. Mm-hmm. I want to make my own trance music.
So which artists were you listening to, or what kind of and which time frame are we talking about?
Yes, yeah, like 2000, I think.
So this is the Rank One era and
System F. System era, F, yeah. Freddy Kost and Armin, of course. You had Paul van Dyk. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wanted to make my try to make my own stuff, and it was always about producing, never about DJing. Mm-hmm. But you know, after you produce a few good tracks, people want to see you play, and
yeah,
that's why when I decided to
start DJing as well,
give it a shot.
So you mentioned that you started making music, well, let's say in 2000 or 2001, or was it just the period of time that you were just listening to music and you started making music at a later point, or?
No, I was always playing around with an old school friend.
Yeah.
We played around with Fast Tracker and stuff like that.
It's really old. That's really old school.
You know, like those 1-2 pattern songs, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. And a few years later, I decided to go try with Reason and FL Studio.
Yeah.
Also try Cubase in the very beginning. But yeah, it wasn't really for me, so I decided to go and buy a Mac.
Yeah.
With Logic, and that worked best for my brain. And that's like, I think almost 20 years ago.
Almost 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
And was the because Alan Watts is not your real name? Did you have any other projects before you became Alan Watts, or was it? Tell us about it.
No. Actually, this was my first real project, and I knew this guy from a synth forum. It's the brother of Richard Durant, Alex Orion.
Yeah.
So I was chatting with him, and I had this track, and I knew his brother here had a label. So I sent to him, and he sent to Richard, his brother.
Yeah.
And they decided to release that. But then the artist name, well, what do we do about that?
So okay.
And I said, we can go just with Alle Wacht. He said, yeah, that's a bit difficult for the English people to pronounce. So maybe let's
Alle Wacht.
Alle Wacht, yeah. So he said, maybe let's do something similar. Then we, Alle Wacht, what? So we came to that idea.
That's interesting. I wonder how that brain wave went from Wacht to what. That's
interesting. It's quite similar, but...
Yeah. Well, okay, that was 2012, right? Or are you not talking about what may come?
Yeah, that's the first release,
So it took you quite a long time before you got to a level where you were like releasing stuff. What was the hardest part of in learning these kind of things for yourself? Because some people just, you know, they make something, they release it straight away, or they get signed straight away. For you, it was a little bit longer period then.
Yeah, I had bit less time, but I wanted to make something releasable,
yeah,
and not just throw something out, because you don't come anywhere with that if you just release something that sounds like trash.
Yeah.
So I want to be at a certain level before I put tracks out.
And that's the level that you decided for yourself, or did other people decide that for you?
Yeah, it's basically from both sides. I thought that this sounds quite good now.
Mm-hmm.
So then I decided to send it to Alex Orion, and he sent it to his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good enough to release. So that's the start.
Do you remember the feeling that you signed your first track?
Yeah, of course. I was over the moon and very excited, of course. Super happy.
Did you ever talk with Richard Durant about it anymore?
Yeah, sometimes. I said to him like a while ago, like, yeah, I released on your Terminal 4 recording.
Yeah,
back in the days. And he said, oh yeah, I remember.
He still remembered it? He was saying he remembered it, but he didn't.
Probably not.
And of course, a year later, well, first you released another track, but that was on In Transit Trust, on Black Hole Recordings, of course. And then a year later, I would say the world got to know Alan Watts because of Blackout. I was listening to it yesterday, actually. I was like, holy shit, that was a big track.
That was a huge one, yeah.
What do you remember about making Blackout?
What do I remember? Yeah, I remember I got inspired by another artist. I cannot remember which one it was before, but yeah. And basically, I started playing with my keyboard, you know, like the short tit. And yeah, basically the track wrote itself. It's like such a great feeling. And
yeah,
you put this in, put that in, and everything just sounded perfect together.
That's one of those days that you're like, oh, everything that you touch is perfectly fine.
Yeah, this is one of those days that...
I wish I had that every day.
I wish I had it every day, yeah.
And then you signed it away. But like I said, you already started with Richard Durand's label. Then you went to In Transit Trust. And this was on Monster Tunes.
Monster Tunes, yeah. I think I had one release before that on Monster Tunes. It was Tomahawk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a good... good connection with was Hyatt. James Hyatt was back in the days.
Yeah.
He works for Armada now. Yeah, we had a good connection, and so I decided to send some stuff again.
Mm-hmm. And then Blackout came. Did you expect that it become such a big track?
No. I never had expected that it would be this big.
Yeah, because right after that, I guess Armin approached you straight away to do a remix.
Yeah, for the Save My Night.
Save My Night. That became a big tune as well. And later on, you became more part of the Who's Freddy 138 team. What is your experience in that period of time? Because it was such a different time. If you look back at it, why did you decide to go into the direction that you decided to go? Because it was a difficult time for trance at certain points, but you just kept on going with the label as well.
Yeah, I just I know how to make trance music. Like different slower stuff is very difficult. So I'm like more experienced in trance music. So I decided to just go full with that.
Uh-huh.
And send everything to Armada for the good exposure, of course.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, James Hyatt became part of the Armada team as well, which made it a little bit easier for you, I guess.
Definitely, yeah. Made it a lot easier as well.
Because I think the first release that you had with the Who's Freddy 138 was Kepler. Am I right or wrong? I think you are.
Kepler and Step Into My World.
Step Into My World, yeah.
Those were like the first releases.
And that's already almost 10 years ago.
It's like a decade, yeah.
It's been a ride, definitely.
It's been a ride, yeah.
If you look back at the period, what was the hardest challenge for you into becoming the producer that you are right now? Because there's a lot of young and aspiring DJs and producer that are looking up to you. They're like, hey, how do I get to a level where he is right now?
Yeah, what's different to keep on making the quality every time? Don't put out the less good tracks.
Yeah,
just keep yourself on a level.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a big challenge too.
So the hardest thing for you is to make sure that even though sometimes you make something that you think is really cool, but then you listen to it later on and you're like, okay, this is not good enough for Alan Watts.
Yeah, but, and maybe the melody is good, but you know, the kick and the drive, the everything together.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to rework it, trash it, and then start over again with the melodies.
Do you sometimes look back at these projects and then pick something out of it? Like let's go back to 2009. You still have a project file from back then. You're like, hey, that was interesting. How I was thinking back then when making music?
Yeah, not really. When I'm uninspired, I go through my old projects.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's like something interesting in there. So I just pick that interesting part out and then try and make something new of that again. So yeah. It's tough to keep on that level, you know.
Do you ever throw something away, like any ideas or something, or you just save everything?
Mostly, now like a few weeks ago, I like cleaned up a bit of my old stuff. So mm-hmm. Like this is like nothing. I need to trash this, but yeah, mostly I keep it on the hard disk and then
Just in case.
Just in case, you never know. And go through it later. And if it's really nothing, then bin it.
Yeah, because I guess when you get to the point where you are, you also talk about it a lot with, in this case, James Hyatt, right? That you talk about, hey, this direction that I want to do, or hey, is this track good enough to become an Alan Watts track? Or that's how you work with A&Rs? Or
yeah, basically, what I would do with Hyatt sometimes with A&Rs is I send like a almost finished track, like, hey, is this going into the right direction? Mm-hmm. Like you say, what do we need, or is it not good enough? So yeah, always talk with A&R, discuss.
And how do you handle the feedback that he gives you? Because when someone gives me like say like, hey, this is not good enough, or hey, this you should do this or this or this. Sometimes I'm like, hey, I don't really want to listen to this. I think you're wrong. But how do you handle the feedback like that?
Yeah, you always.
Or maybe in your head you made the biggest track of your career. You send it over and then.
Well, yeah. I had it with Arizona.
Yeah.
It was like finished and then sent it to the A&R, but they were also like.
Not sure.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because of the day, you know. Like,
yeah.
But I knew Armin picked it up and he said, like, it was really good. So yeah, the one person is not the other.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's very true.
That's
Okay, spill the beans here, because someone, I think it was like 2 weeks ago in the podcast, someone told me that, I can't remember who it was. I'll come up to it. But he was like, first I sent a demo in January, it was rejected. I sent the same track in March or April, and then it got signed. Is that something that happened to you as well?
I never never had that before, but yeah, it's all the... Maybe depends on the day, how his mood is.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, the A&R, one person is not the other, or the one day is not the other day.
Yeah, so. Definitely. That's very true. All right. And now let's go a little bit forward in time, because nowadays you're an A&R yourself as well for High Voltage. Tell us why you started High Voltage, because there's so many labels already. You released with so many labels. Why did you start it?
Yeah, because I started in the Corona period, mm-hmm. and there was like so many trance tracks around, and I got asked by a lot of upcoming producers, I got this track, can you give me some feedback on mm-hmm. it? And I was like, yeah, why don't I just start my own label? Because I hear a lot of good tracks coming. And that's where I started, basically. Then I took some good tracks on the label for it, and then it went from there.
Mm-hmm. And how do you decide a track is good enough? Because you're, like I said, you're very demanding on your own music. How do you make sure that the quality keeps going up on your label as well, on High Voltage?
Yeah, you have to be critical. Don't sign everything that you get sent. Mm-hmm. When there's something like potential in there,
mm-hmm.
but it's not there yet, I just say, hey, this sounds really good, but maybe you know, give us some feedback, maybe you can change this, put this on, or other kick or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And it works
yeah, but basically good. Yeah.
Yeah, because you release something every week almost. Yeah, it's like, say, how do you keep up with that quality? Like, do you get that many demos? Are there so many producers that produce in the sound of High Voltage that you can fill up a whole schedule?
Yeah, just like I said, I get sent so many demos. It's crazy. Want to thank everybody for keep on sending them.
And where can people send their demos?
Basically, you have to go to my website, highvoltagerecordings.com, and through the demo drop.
Who's going to listen to it? Are you listening to it by yourself?
Yeah, I'm listening every track by myself.
Interesting. And you also started a Low Voltage, which is... a sub-label of High Voltage, or is it sister, brother label or something like that? Why did you start that one?
Yeah, basically because I also enjoy the slower progressive stuff, melodic mm-hmm. Techno stuff. And I was doing a side project with a good friend of mine, Silvella. We started this Wattzilla project.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to have control of things ourselves. And then released our first track on the Low Voltage, and basically it rolled on from there.
And then you started getting demos for that label in as well?
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
That's how...
Well, that's how it goes, I guess. Yeah. So there's the more melodic techno sound, the more housey sound, the slower stuff.
The slower stuff.
Is that something that you play in your sets as well, or do you focus on the high voltage stuff?
No, in my sets, it's more all the high voltage stuff.
Okay.
It's just my where my heart is.
And your latest release was Renegade with David Forbes. How did that come about?
Yeah, I really love this stuff.
The hard-hitting stuff.
The hard-hitting stuff. Yeah. I also enjoy that a lot. And it was like 1.5 years ago when he started to make really, really the hard stuff.
Yeah.
I approached him and I said, hey, do you want to do a collab?
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm all over it. So we went from there and then...
I think he's the fastest producer on the planet. He told me that he creates at least 1 or 2 tracks every single day. It's unbelievable. I don't know how he does it, but it's some sort of a magician, I think.
Magician, yeah. Sounds like
Hey, talking about collabs, because I'm very curious about this, to hear your opinion about this, because in 2013, you created Afterburner with Billy Gillies. What do you think of his rise at the moment and the change that is happening in the trance scene with sounds?
Yeah. It's really, really good and nice to see that he's making his rise, because, yeah, of course, he's really hardworking.
Yeah.
Guy, and reworking the older stuff.
I love that the new DNA song is DNA so good, stuff, so yeah. Catchy.
The old school trance, people love it.
Yeah, because I've seen on your socials that you've been flirting with it also a little bit to rework some, let's say, 2000s or 90s tracks. Is this something that you're pursuing as well? Because in general, we know you for your instrumental tracks, right?
Yeah. So I did a. Like a rework of Boys of Summer, the DJ Sammy.
Yeah.
It's really, I listened to it a lot back in the days. And so I thought, let's give it my own approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
And played it at festivals as well. And the people love it, the older stuff. It's really nice to see.
Is it something that you're going to do more in the future as well? Because I see right now that, let's say in the UK, for example, that every... artists on the main stages and whatnot, like even here in Europe right now, they're playing Lock and Load, Blow Your Mind, those kind of tracks. And that's the tracks that we grew up with, right? Yeah. So is it something that you pursue as well? Because I'm pretty sure you can make everything you want to as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying something at home, but it's difficult to rework. Like, what track shall I rework now? Because everything is already...
It's already done.
It's already done. It's like, geez, man, it's real. You have to dig in deep.
Yeah, because if you look at the top 40 right now, it's all of them are reworks, basically. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, yeah.
Well, I think it's cool because then a lot of kids right now, they get to know these songs that we grew up with and they don't know it because it's club tracks, so they don't know that they were there. I think that's cool. Anyways, I have a couple of questions for you that were submitted through Instagram. Let's start with a question by Jerry Music. Which is your primary VST? What that Alan Watts sounds like? What do you use? Cheers.
My primary VST is Spire. I use Spire a lot.
It's a synthesizer.
The synthesizer is basically my go-to VST.
So when you open it, what do you do? Do you start presets or do you make your sounds yourself? Or
no, normally I just go to presets first, and then if there's something nice sounding, maybe tweak it a bit so it doesn't sound maybe too much from the sound bank. But basically I go from there. I'm more of a preset guy.
Yeah.
And then tweak it a bit.
Well, it makes sense. Like if the right ingredients are there, why would you make a dish without those ingredients?
It speeds up the workflow as well.
Yeah. So, and so because we're nerding anyway right now. So after that, what kind of effects or what are your go-to reverbs and delays, compressors?
My go-to reverbs is Valhalla.
Mm-hmm.
The Shimmer is really nice. And of course, I can't remember the name. But
Vintage Room?
The Vintage Room, that one, yeah. I use the Valhalla stuff a lot, the reverbs. Really good. Talking about delays, Echo Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Really good. But also the stock plugins are... Ableton or Logic are really, really good.
And how do you get a massive sound? The massive leads that you create?
Layer it and put some ducking reverb, you know, when the steps come.
Yeah.
That the reverb starts breathing, you know.
Uh-huh. This is the secret Alan Watts sauce.
Yeah.
If you want to, I think if you want to know how you create those, because you sell templates as well, and also presets, right?
Correct.
So if you want to work a little bit with your magic or with your brain flow, you can just grab those as well and see how you created those.
Definitely, yeah.
Is it really hard for you to create a template and just give it away? Or just sell it, but you give away your secrets, right?
Yeah, you give away some of your secrets, like not all too deep secrets, but it's like the basic ideas are there.
Yeah.
So I don't give away too much, of course.
So like, okay, sometimes you want to put something in that project, you're like, wait a minute. No, I'm going to keep that for myself.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, fair enough. That's Alice Salant wants to know, are you planning a brand new album full of uplifting? Because you never released an album, did you?
I never released an album. Maybe I should plan one.
Why did you never release an album?
Yeah, basically, I didn't have too much time to do an album.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, there goes like 14, 15 tracks on there.
Well, you decided. It's your album. So you can say it's 4 tracks, it's 5 tracks. It doesn't matter.
So, yeah, it's probably a few years of work, but for me. But yeah, definitely on the planning.
Maybe you are overthinking stuff. Maybe you can just grab some stuff from the future, take 3 more from the
past.
Yeah, and there you go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it with James.
Yeah, let's do that.
Daphne Kauenberg wants to know, when is your collab with Darren Porter coming out?
When is, we still need to finish that. We started it like a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
but we never got really the time to finish it. So,
well, Darren, if you're listening, give this man a schop onder zijn kont and finish that collab.
Or him.
Yeah. And the last one, let's see. Yeah, I think I'll take this one. Ellen, I'm looking to do a collab with you. Are you interested? This is by Hoon IRV Music. So what are you looking for? Let's turn this around. What are you looking for into when you make a collab with someone? Is it something needs to be someone that's already well known, or is it someone that just brings in a good idea?
Yeah, you have to bring in a really good idea if you mm-hmm. want to collab with me. Yeah, for the established producers is more easy to collab with. But if you're upcoming, you have to come with a really good idea.
Yeah.
For a collab, like some fresh, some sounding stuff.
Yeah. And there's a lot of collabs you already did, of course. Is there any other collabs coming in the near future as well? Or what is your dream collab?
Yeah, of course, dream collab would be with Armin, of course.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it's every producer's dream. But at the moment, I don't have much collabs planned because I want to focus a bit more on my own productions.
Yeah. And is it hard to, because you mentioned this before, you have a full-time job and then beside it, you're running a label, you're running a career. How do you do this? Because I spoke about it with John Askew as well. He has the same things that he's just juggling time all the time. Like, hey, this and this is, do you work with a certain time frame for everything, or how does it go?
Yeah, first of all, I only work 24 hours with a normal job. It's like 3 days.
Yeah, but that's a lot still, 24 hours.
I'm struggling sometimes. Yeah. You have to plan everything. Like on this day, I'm going to do this. Monday is usually my label day stuff. The other days is just producing, mm-hmm. Planning. It's just
time management.
Time. It's just management. Plan everything.
John Askew had a really interesting. If you want to hear how John does it, you have to go to his podcast because we recorded one. He is working with different priorities. He puts like different colors on everything, and then he decides this is fair, this is something that needs to happen right now, and he doesn't stop until all the priorities are done. I don't know how he does it, but it's something else.
There's some good advice as well.
Yeah. So give your priorities a different color and just work them down a list and write everything down that you need to do. And I think, to be honest, like if you're up and coming and even in the position that you're in right now, there's never an excuse for not making music, to be honest. Because if you want to do something and you're passionate about it and you love doing it. I remember starting out making music as well. I was doing my studies.
Yeah.
Had a job as well. Had my friends. And in the middle of the night, I would just work on music until 4 in the morning and then go to bed and then wake up too late to go to school.
I had the same thing. I with my normal job, I worked 40 hours a week. Was like 15 years ago, something like that. And when I was free, I took all my free time for producing or learning to produce.
Yeah.
So basically you make like 60, 70 hours a week.
At least. And still too little time.
Still too little time. But if you really want something,
you have to work hard for it and work harder than the people next to you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for answering all these questions. Do you have any last words for the listeners?
Do you have any last words?
Famous last words of Alan Watts.
Keep on listening and supporting my music.
Awesome. Well, that's good last words. Thank you so much for watching this State of Trance podcast or listening to it. Next time, we're going to be back with a new episode with Xiaro and Pitch. If you want to have your questions answered, keep an eye on our socials or write them down in the YouTube comments. See you next time for a new one. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Check all previous episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast portal. A State of Trance Podcast.